we address the elephant in the room?
Yeah.
Go on then.
The elephant who's wearing a fedora and playing a clarinet.
So this is a Pompidou for you.
And now it's time for Pompidou section. Pompidou. Pompidou. Pompidou.
Normally we record at the hours of about 10:20 is when we normally kick off in the morning.
Yep. The arranged time is 10 o'clock.
The arranged time is 10 o'clock.
It's been subsiding towards 10:30 over the past 2.5 years, hasn't it? We're currently at 10:20.
What happens when we reach 10:30?
10:30 will be fine. It's when we reach 10:20 the next day. It's like when you finish Pac-Man. It just crashes. I mean, it's like that kid who finished Tetris.
Yes, I saw that the other day.
You've seen that? Yeah, yeah. So it crashes, and a sort of an American 12-year-old somewhere starts losing their shit.
We finished. I finished the beans. The beans are finished, Mom. Mom, the beans are finished. I can't believe this. I stuck it out till the end.
But then, I've not seen that.
Have you not seen that?
No.
There's a kid who finishes Tetris, and basically, 80s computer games. The way they ended was. It crashed.
You were never meant to get that far in Tetris, basically.
Was it the arrogance of the program makers? They just didn't think it could be done. Is that the idea?
Exactly. It just gets to a point where, and you know, all the scores are going round within the digi system of an 80s computer game. Well, it's a bit like the Millennium Bug, but for real. Because once everything hits 9, once the numbers can't carry on anymore.
Can't reset. It can't work it out.
It just sort of... Well, it crashes. It does what the Millennium Bug was supposed to have done to planes and stuff, doesn't it? It just goes and freezes.
And then the kid starts freaking out.
Yeah. In a way, it's a bit distressing.
A bit distressing,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Has this happened very recently? Has this been documented? This isn't like a thing from the 80s or something.
It's only happened recently, and it shouldn't be able to happen. Like, this kid's like nerve endings are different in order for this to happen. Do you know what I mean?
See.
In terms of how quickly he's operating. Because you see his last few moves, and the way he's manipulating that rectangular piece. It's like an American cheerleader with a baton.
Oh, wow.
The speed with which he spins it and can adjust it and stuff.
I had a visit from the CIA. He's been taken to some lab somewhere in Nevada.
That's right.
And his spine has been removed and put into a robot.
Yeah. Yeah. For safekeeping.
And he's just been kept in that moment at all times.
Yeah.
If he moves beyond that moment, he will crash.
He's kept in that moment and he can be deployed as the ultimate weapon at some point.
He's just got to work out what that weapon is.
Yeah, exactly. And who it'll work against.
Mm.
The irony will be against the Russians, who created Tetris themselves.
When Russia starts dropping rectangles and cubes and onto Washington, that's when they'll have to crack him out. There was a film recently, wasn't there, about the Tetris story? Ding, 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 ding.
That's not the music from Tetris.
That's not the music, is it? That's Manic Miner, I think, or another similar game.
Isn't that Peter and the Wolf? Are you doing the music from Peter and the Wolf?
I'm not sure.
Is it Peter and the Wolf?
It's Hall of the Mountain King.
It is Hall of the Mountain King.
It's not Peter the Wolf.
That's definitely used in a computer game. I can't remember which one. It's that funny thing with 80s computer games. So it's essentially what that kid... I think in that moment in the video, because he starts convulsing and his voice starts doing very weird things.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Does he begin speaking in tongues?
It's a bit like when I tried to do that Paul McCartney impression.
And you were possessed.
And I was possessed. And I think what's happened is because in life you're never supposed to truly attain the thing. And it's about travelling, isn't it? It's about being on the way to something.
Oh, he had the ultimate experience of the arrival fallacy, or whatever it's called.
He experienced the arrival fallacy, which is all that happens at the end of Tetris is the cubes stop coming down.
And your coffee has gone cold.
Yeah, but that's what I was impressed by, because if it had been me and I had done it, and this is what's meant to happen, is it finishes and then you just feel nothing. You feel like a deep, deep emptiness that you've never felt before.
Yeah.
And you just look into the middle distance. But instead, the kid does start going insane, like it's... Like he's amazing, like it's amazing feeling. Like, oh my God, oh my God. Whereas in any small way that I've ever achieved anything, you don't feel that, do you? You just go, there we are.
So do you think then that's an affected response? Is he just trying to delay the emptiness? Is he aware
the emptiness is coming?
He knows that the abyss is creeping up on him.
Oh, it's coming.
And he's trying to fight the abyss. Is that all he's trying to do?
Cubes of emptiness are going to start falling from the sky in different shaped cubes and rectangles.
And landing on him wherever he goes. And he will not be able to stack them neatly and make him disappear by lining them up in rows. Because there'll be too many of them and a lot of them will be metaphorical. And he won't have a system for that and have to talk that through with one of his four therapists. He'll have a Jungian, an anti-Jungian,
A post-Freudian.
And a physiotherapist as well. You can't play that much Tetris. And sort of, I mean, there's no way he can actually...
Specialising in thumbs.
His hands will be all over the shop. I don't think he can. Because we are, in a way, we're all a shape, aren't we, that we seek to fit into the world.
Hello. Oh, my God.
What? So I don't think he can control his own physical body shape. So actually, if that video is anything to go by, he's kind of convulsing, isn't he? He's sort of...
Yeah, it's quite disturbing. Anyway, the point we were making was to do with the fact that what the time is, basically. It's normally 10 past 10.
I see, yeah.
It's currently 18:49.
I.e. the jazz hour. Welcome to a smooth, steamy, jazz-infused night a la Bean.
On Anecdotes, Henry Packer.
Oh, I went down. I went to Surrey recently for the first time. Don't know, just warming up. Down, Surrey. Try the new cinnamon bun. Yeah.
On Jingles.
It's Banjo Ben Partridge. And your cocktail waiter for the night. It's my Wozniak.
Suppose so.
Yeah.
It's different vibe, isn't it?
Different vibe.
It already feels quite different, a bit languid.
A bit after hours, isn't it?
Mike is wearing a dinner jacket with just the bow tie undone, rakishly tumbling around his neck.
Yeah.
That's right. He's wearing his moustaches at a rakish angle.
Yeah, also draped across my neck. Yeah,
and draped across his neck.
Fully unfurled. Ben's got the bean machine sloughing in the bath, haven't you, at the moment? You're draped across the edge. Couple of candles I see on the side there, Ben.
Ben is as close as he ever gets to being disconnected from the bean machine, which is...
It's the evening sluicing, the Vespertine sluicing.
The Vespertine sluicing is going on. Obviously, Ben can never fully disassociate himself from it physically, can he? So there's still the tendrils. There's a mixture of wires, springs. Some of them are fleshy springs. It's hard to know which ones are fleshy and which ones are...
There's my new fibre optic spine. Thank you to the guys from BT for that.
It's odd to see. He's feeding some sort of orifice a pepperoni pizza, which I'm not seeing before.
That's right.
He's not even cut it up.
We don't normally talk about the orifice, do we? But it feels like because it's after hours.
Well, it's hard to know often if it's an innie or an outie, so to speak, and orifice wise, and whether it's okay to ask. Really,
it's got the personality. If you had to say it had a personality, it's got the personality of an angry cloaca. You'd say. But it ingests, it digests, it sprouts things, and it makes a kind of what is a kind of hideous vacuum, sort of vacuum sucking.
Mostly sucking light.
Yeah. It sucks light, which actually tonight works well because it's helping create the kind of...
It's a lovely bit of shadow on there. We've got a chiaroscuro partridge, haven't we, which you don't often see.
But yeah, it feels like one of those jazz bars where it's like no one here is with their own spouse or partner. It's one of those nights. Everyone's, you know, there's no rules really.
Everyone's with a different diplomat's daughter.
Yeah. Exactly. And there's a lot of nougat flying around. It's mainly diplomatic gifts, isn't it? That the daughters have brought with them.
In special nougat bags.
Special nougat
bags. Very much the number one gift these days, isn't it, of the diplomatic class?
It really is.
Hard nougat, soft nougat.
That's right. Nut-free nougat.
Secret Toblerones.
Yeah. Just nut nougat.
Novelty nougats for people who like the cultural attaches, those guys.
It's a kind of night where it's like, look, guys, there isn't a fire exit. Who cares? Yeah. You know what I mean? You'd be so slammed within 5 minutes, you wouldn't be able to use one if there was one. So we've had it taken out and replaced with
more nougat,
more exposed brick.
Well, it's a faux nougat wall, isn't it? So some of it's brick, some of it's nougat. Doesn't really matter. It's one of those nights. Oh, yeah.
And introducing our guest of honour who built that wall this evening, it's that kid that completed Tetris. Here he is. He's Tetrising all the nougat that's falling from the ceiling.
Don't look at him directly in the face because he now has it's the saddest face of all time. Please don't look at him directly in the face.
If he sees your face, he will find the reciprocal anti-face and he will slot your face into that anti-face.
Slot it straight
within,
in.
Within a second flat.
That's right. And he'll play that little Russian bit of music, won't he? He'll play that to you.
Ding, 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 ding.
But that'll be cold comfort knowing that your face will always and forever now be linked to its equal and opposite anti-face for the rest of your days. Unless you can stack up enough other faces and anti-faces on top of yours until you crash. That's the best thing that could happen for you.
Yeah, or unless you can wear a protective nougat mesh over your face.
Your face is mine, your face is mine, your face is mine, your face is mine, your
I
face
own your
is mine.
Face now. If I collect enough faces, then maybe I can go to places with friends.
Maybe I can complete humans.
So anyway, look, it's a very different vibe. Well, here's a sound you don't often hear on the podcast, or ever hear.
Oh, you got your empty milk bottles.
Oh, is that a drinks trolley?
It's my little mini drink section.
Good Lord.
I've got some beers. Is that okay?
You've got beers for the...
Ben's got a beer.
Oh.
I might crack one. What do you think?
Crack a beer.
Well, yeah.
Is that okay? We'll see what happens.
Well, the sun's past the yard. You're in your own home. It feels quite jazzy.
It does feel quite jazzy. It feels a little bit wrong.
I will also be... I think the phrase is doing balloons throughout.
So that's a mixture of ketamine and poppers. That's your own personal little...
But delivered into a sort of marsupial pouch under your left arm.
Yeah. It's one of the few positives of the bean machine is that you've had a marsupial patch attached, haven't you, to your side, which you can lift up and then doctors can put drips in it. But there's also, you've got USB-C adapters, haven't you, in there? Mm-hmm.
Firewire, yeah.
You've got firewire. And you've got a scart lead.
Got a scart lead, old-fashioned scart lead.
Could come back round again. We don't know. Don't get rid of those cables,
you
people.
Keep it. You might as well. Especially in the after digi, you know, in the post-apocalypse years, it could be that SCART is one of the only things that they can't hack.
Could be the only way we can watch Dirty Dancing after the apocalypse comes.
Just watching Dirty Dancing over and over again and eating our way through our nougat fortress. Knowing that every brick we eat from the nougat fortress means that we're actually less secure. Aren't we? So it's a trade-off.
Yeah, it's the irony wall, isn't it?
Irony wall.
It's feeding us, and yet.
So I'm going to put these other three beers in the fridge.
Mm.
What? So you've gone for, I think, if I can see correctly, that's Birra Moretti.
Yes, Birra Moretti. So I know a little bit about beer. I choose this one because I like the green hat on the man. So not all beers have a green hat on the man. A lot of them don't have any man or a hat. Some do have a mixture of both or one or the other. This one's got both. It's got a man and a hat, and I like the hat. So.
And he's got a kind of alpine vibe as well, isn't he? Which
is it alpine? I've always thought, is he not an Italian?
He can be both, can he not?
I always thought he's an Italian detective.
Could he not be an Italian alpine detective?
Oh, he could be an alpine detective.
He's from the Tyrol.
Nice.
Is he from the Tyrol?
Yeah.
He might be from the area in Italy where, I've talked about this on the pod, where I went on a skiing holiday and I got a bit of cigarette in my pizza. We've talked about this on the pod. But that was alpine Italy, wasn't it?
Yeah. Could have been that guy.
Could have been that guy, or he could have solved the case of it.
He could still be working on the case.
Could still be working on the case.
Dogging him all these years. Can't let it go. It's driven him mad.
I will be drinking a Wanker's Brew.
Lovely. It's got all the signs of the Wanker's
Brew.
Are
you still getting, is this from your subscription?
You get sent those, don't you? In the anti-health, the opposite of a veg box, you get a beer box to slowly destroy
it. Yeah, this is from the postal beer box, yeah.
Do you also get the gold level subscription where when they ring on the bell with the beers, you can look out the window while they smash a box of veg onto the pavement and absolutely just
they pulverize
it into the ground with their boots?
That's right.
Stamp on it.
Yeah.
And then take a pair of running shorts and set fire to them. Right, I'm going to put these beers in.
What's yours called, Ben?
It's called Hallo Gallo. It's got some whales on the front who are all enjoying pints of beer.
Lovely. Going down smooth?
Tastes just like Foster's.
I had to roll the red cabbage to the side to stick my three beers in. Do you even know what that means, Ben?
I earlier today bought a Savoy cabbage, so take that back.
Yeah, so that you could smash it up with a big... bit of wood.
In front of the greengrocer and their entire family.
In front of the greengrocer, couldn't you? In one of your daily protests.
It's going with my venison that I'm roasting tomorrow. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
What I was going to say was, in terms of a bit of a Pompidou. I would say, more than maybe any other podcast, among the billions of podcasts that are on the iTunes app or other podcast app.
By the way, can I say, it always hurts me a little bit when someone says that You know, they're not, you know, it makes us feel less special, doesn't it?
When someone says what?
Well, there's millions of podcasts. And people say, oh, everyone's got a podcast these days. I think my mum even said that the other day. Oh, everyone's got a podcast, haven't they? That sparrow's probably got a podcast, hasn't he?
Oh, I'm so proud of you.
I'm like, shall we go and ask that sparrow, shall we? As I did have a podcast.
Was she yet again comparing you negatively with Peter Crouch?
Crouch's podcast is breaking all kinds of records. How are you doing? I've actually started listening to that Sparrow's podcast. It's quite good. It's called Spadcast. Just a sort of...
Just shopping, you know, and fucking.
It's just like Shopping and Fucking, the play, but performed by different sparrows every time. it's a weird concept, actually. I absolutely love it.
It just works. It just works.
It just works, Henry. I absolutely love it. What are you saying, Ben?
I was saying that I think this podcast, of all others on Earth, relies more heavily on the energy levels of one man than any other podcast. I'm talking about the energy levels of Henry Packer. Now, having worked with Henry over the years, both me and Mike know that you've got to harness the man at certain times of day because there are certain danger points.
Yeah.
The post-lunch dip is profound.
Your mid-afternoon write-off and so on.
Exactly. It's husky. It's like working with a husky, isn't it? You can't make the husky's not going to drag all day. That's what I always say. The husky will drag in the morning for about an hour and a half.
Then get in the sleigh and a different husky will have a go. Is that right? Is that
how it works? Exactly. Then it swaps, presumably. Another husky has a go, and that's why huskies have such long and successful marriages. Because they share the load.
But I think normally what we do is we record in the morning because you're feeling fresh. You're ready to go.
Well, we're all feeling fresh, aren't we? It works. No. No?
I'm not feeling fresh when we record our podcast.
No, you're not a morning person, are you? No. So we've actually never heard you at your best.
I'm about to go off the chain. Are you ready?
Let's do this.
I'm about to be very powerful. What I say will be powerful.
It's going to be incredible. Frightening. Well, my real danger zone is lunch and post-lunch. So I have been worried about tonight, but I think we'll see what happens. The danger zone is your 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock rock.
The siesta hours.
But I think now I may be leveling out. Also, I did something to try and get my energy up, which is I've just done a spinning class.
I also did something to get my energy up.
Did you?
Yeah.
What did you do?
I had a large ham and salami sandwich.
Also known as a Cardiff spinning class.
Similar workout for my heart.
It's very. And also, like my spinning class, you get the disco music. Do, come on, guys, we can do this.
You get faster and faster and faster and faster and faster and faster.
Now, quick, get that salami down. Now, slow down on the cheese. Then get it fast again. The salami, don't eat anything. Do, like that. Is that how you do it?
And more salami. More salami.
More salami. More salami. You can do this, guys. Come on. Yeah. Feel that sweat coming off the meat.
Feel that high resistance red Leicester. Yeah.
Let's turn on the beam machine.
You betcha.
This week's topic, as sent in by Diogo from Lisbon, is James Bond.
Here's my view on this.
Okay.
I think we should basically almost completely ignore that suggestion.
But formally, rather than by mistake.
No, slightly more formally than usual. And talk about the fact that I'm eating Parmesan, toasted pine nuts, and basil mini biscuits.
That one B has really gone to your head, Henry.
<I know>. He's a dreadful drunk.
Such an awful, awful drunk.
Doesn't become morose, doesn't become violent. He just gets preoccupied by crunchy snacks.
And talking to anyone he can about them, bending anyone's ear. And later on tonight, I will be sitting on top of Nelson's shoulders, at the top of Nelson's column, shoving cheesy biscuits into his massive, massive ears. Because his head is the size of like a car. Once you get up there.
This is what we've done with the freedom you gave us, Nelson. Thank you.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm fine with talking about Bond. I mean, I just think that Bond has been discussed a lot in a comedic way.
You think crackers might be a better route?
Well, no, I think, you know, we could talk around Bond a bit, but I'm not gonna have a conversation with you about why doesn't the villain actually just kill him when they get the chance? Instead of tying him up and saying, "Well, see you later, Mr. Bond." I mean, come on.
Henry, you've done it.
That's good stuff, Henry.
I know, it's good. It's actually good. The stuff I cast off is actually quite good stuff. Isn't it? It's like a bald man walking around on his hands and knees on the floor of a barber's shop. I mean, this is all perfectly good hair. I could reconstitute this. And, you know, that's one of the things I did before I got into podcasting. I've had all kinds of jobs.
Well, a hairdresser's floor monkey.
And one of them was making hand beards.
I was a hand beard weaver. And you can get a Chelsea beard, depending on where the barber shops were. I could get you a Chelsea beard. I did Ealing beards, and I outsourced a lot of it to other bald men. It's a bit like charity shops. You get the better stuff in a more high-end area. So your Chelsea beards, your Kensington beards, that's where you got the real premium stuff, yeah.
Well, you would find out, wouldn't you, where Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen was getting his hair cut.
That's right.
And then you go and sweep that up.
Mm. Oh yeah.
Are you back on the crackers? Straight in the ear of the listener.
You know what? There are so many different cheesy little biscuit things these days.
I thought you were going to say there are so many different times when it's appropriate to eat crunchy snacks.
So many.
Other than, for example, when you're recording a podcast.
It's easier to list the times when it's not appropriate. No, but it's evening vibes, isn't it? Is this going to cause edit problems if the crunches don't sort of continue? If you know what I mean? Be like, oh, he's halfway through a crunch and now it's moved to...
Well, you just keep mashing up crackers in your hands while you're talking. Just throughout the rest of it. Yeah. For continuity.
Well, somebody might go, hang on, that crunch turned from a Ritz to a tuck cracker.
Hang on. But he made a tax claim for a more expensive cracker, but he's actually halfway through the cracker. He's definitely using a cheaper cracker. There are so many high-end cheese crackers available these days.
Do you mean your cheese-flavoured cracker, or do you your cracker you put cheese upon?
No, I'm talking about a cheese-infused cracker, mate. So okay, crackers infused. Have cheese in them. There are so many. You never need to eat the same one twice. I've never even heard of this brand.
You never eat the same cheese cracker twice is one of the Bond films that never quite made it.
You never eat the same cheese cracker twice.
Still time. Get Idris involved. It could happen.
So who do you think the next Bond's going to be then?
Well, people have been saying Idris Elba so much
that
it sort of has to be now, doesn't it?
No. Hiddleston was in the mix for a bit, wasn't he?
Oh, no.
Not Hiddleston. Oh, no. Why, oh, why is Plemons not in the conversation, at least? He should be in the conversation. He can play anyone.
Hello, Omni Casting Agency. We can cast any part.
An Italian man selling lemons.
Look no further than Jesse Plemons.
What about the owner of the first ever zoo?
Jesse Plemons is the man for you.
I'm making a biopic of Hans Blix.
Jesse Plemons will be there quick.
It's my son's birthday and I want to get a clown.
Plemons will do it for £20.
Listen, as you know, we've been trying to cast the role of Monica Lewinsky now for a while. We've run into a number of roadblocks. I just wondered if there's anyone on your books who could do a good Lewinsky.
Plemons?
Jesse Plemons.
Jesse Plemons.
Of course. Of course, Plemons. Plemons.
Plemons.
Plemons.
Plemons.
Plemons. Plemons.
So, Mike,
yeah.
You're a man who enjoys a novel about one of the MIs, MI1. Secret Dogs, MI2, Electric Fish.
I do. In fact, I literally just finished, only last night I finished a book I was gifted over the Christmas period. That was a spy novel that was sold to me as the American Le Carré.
Oh.
But I think by a person who hadn't read it, because it wasn't. Quite frankly.
From page one, you were like, well, this isn't Le Carré. For one thing, it doesn't say by Le Carré on the front. This is not Le Carré's font.
Here we go. I've got it.
Right, here we go. We want a full book.
This is Damascus Station.
Damascus Station
by David McCloskey. It's a great author's name, right? I think David McCloskey.
No, sorry,
he could do with a single syllable, I think, instead of a David.
Major problem with his name. Hold the book up, because his name is too long. It's supposed to be two syllables. Steve Banjax.
This is good editing, Henry. So they just needed to, because the muck is quite good, isn't it? Normally they save the muck for the hero, but it could be for an author. So if he'd just gone Dave McClass, if they just snipped off
got to
the end of his names.
Yeah, well, that would help. Because the problem that he's got is his name. The name is supposed to be eventually, hopefully, as big as, if not bigger than the title, right? But his name can't get that big without having to go to a second line. That's why you need to be called James Herbert.
Yeah. I will say, though, as you can see on the front cover, this is the best spy novel I have ever read. Not my words. The words of General David Petraeus.
Hang on.
Wow.
The best book I've ever read, did he say?
Yeah. The best spy novel I've ever read.
General Petraeus.
To be fair to General Petraeus.
Wow. Because he lives inside a spy novel to a degree, you'd imagine.
He has done, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So it's accurate.
Yeah, he doesn't. He cleverly doesn't say whether or not he's bothered to read one in the past. Also said to be breathlessly gripping and truly terrifying by Simon Sebag Montefiore.
Montefiore. His name is way too long. He will never write a great thriller. I'll say that now.
My friend Tom Crowley sent me this the other day. He was in, I don't know where he was, but he found a Robert Ludlum book.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, this must be the best title. And it says, Robert Ludlum, the best-selling author of The Lazarus Vendetta, presents The Parsifal Mosaic.
That's very much it. That's when Ludlum's got to the point where he's just made a bunch of... He's had an assistant made a pair of massive dice for him, basically.
Yeah. Like those ones that D&D people use, with like 500 sides on each one.
Yeah.
Where's the adjective dice? I need the adjective dice. Give me another noun dice. Roll them.
I think The Parsifal Mosaic must be one of the best ones.
How can a mosaic ever be like a crucial part of like an action story?
Well, the word is too hard to get your gob around in the first place, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mosaic. Do you know what I mean?
By the time you finish saying it, you're already dead. Parsifal Mosaic.
So, yeah. Mike, I want a book review now of this.
You don't really need it. I mean, this is very much one of those ones where, I mean, literally everyone... See, the thing about like Le Carré, like there's, you know, there's flawed characters. It sounds quite credible as well. People do stuff that sounds credible. Whereas everyone here is the absolute best of the best of the best. And she was the best goddamn analyst he'd ever worked with since their time in Doha. It's all that kind of
but
stuff.
She was also the best at having a problem with the bottle.
And the agent he recruits is super, super smoking hot. And I knew I shouldn't bang her, but God damn it, there we were banging and we were doing some banging and that was against protocol, but by God, she was so hot and I was so hot. Ha. Do you know what I mean? It's that, basically. Quite a lot of that. It's quite tiring.
That's the trouble with protocol. When it's wearing really nice underwear, it goes out of the window.
That sort of thing. Probably was a line. I mean, they normally got me because, I mean, it is a book with a map at the front and I'm a sucker for that.
That's just a random map of the Berlin Metro, though. Is it to do with the story? Are you going to check that? Because no one ever really looks at the map during a book.
Is it Middle Earth?
Yes, there's a place in it called Hobbiton. I don't remember that being part of Damascus.
It's actually a map of free toilets you can use in central London. It's actually really helpful. It's got the John Lewis toilets.
Yeah, and it's got a little sign that tells you whether or not they might retract into the ground in the middle of a piss. So be careful for that.
Bond would know all the public toilets that you can use, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Bond can walk into any public toilet in London and come out of any other public toilet of London.
That's right.
Like, for him, it's a kind of tube map.
but through the toilet. That's where they didn't show it in the film. It's through the U-bend, up through the... It's really gross. It's horrible, horrible. It takes ages. It's really, really painful and disgusting. So they didn't show it in the film.
And there is a much easier way to get from John Lewis to Selfridges, which is just to walk for 10 minutes.
Just walk. It's actually quite a nice walk as well.
Yeah.
So the what's it called? The Damascus Station?
Damascus Station.
I assume, Mike, because you're like a sort of spy realist... You know, you respect the carrier. You like it to have been quite researched, quite dry. Don't you? That's what you like.
Well, I think this guy did work for the CIA, the guy that wrote it. That's what he claimed, at least.
What I'm wondering is, does that mean that you find Bond a bit unrealistic? All the lasers, all the bikinis. It's not really.
The young lad, the adolescent, Mike, was very fond of it, a bit of Bond. Don't get me wrong. I'm not made of stone.
Movie or book?
Oh, the movies. Although I did visit the books later on. I found them quite exciting.
Ooh.
But this is this feels like a book that's been written in the hope that someone will make it into a film, is what it feels like.
Ah, yes.
Do you know what I mean? Do you ever read books like that?
Is it say things like, and here comes our hero, maybe played by
Jesse Plemons.
A Plemons-like character.
He looked exactly like Jesse Plemons.
He faced his assistant, a Paul Giamatti type.
Really struck him at the time how weird it was, but he literally looked exactly like Paul Giamatti.
He finally faced his foe, brackets, mainly CGI.
Yeah, it's basically that. And there's a big old shoot-up. There's a needlessly huge shoot-up towards the end.
He remembered thinking that he looked exactly like Paul Giamatti and that Paul Giamatti would probably be interested in playing the role of that person, A, because he already looks like him, and B... Because, you know, if this was ever to be made in the film, and B, because, and might think about doing it at a low rate, because the film is likely to have a lot of pickup in the Asian markets, we could probably do some sort of deal involving a cut of receipts. just get in touch. Just call me, Paul. Call me. Here's my number.
Probably some sort of merch-based, some sort of soup merch.
We might be able to get a soup.
Special soup sachets as the merch.
Giamatti minestrone. Giamatti minestrone, for example. That's just off the top of my head, Paul. The thing is, Paul, just get in touch. Honestly, sit down with me. We have breakfast together, Paul. I believe in this project. I believe in you. Here's my number again. Okay, in fact, the next chapter is just going to be my number over and over again. Yeah.
I'm a schedule for the next 18 months.
In fact, I'm changing the title of this book to my phone number.
He looked across the Damascus skyline, although Marrakesh could definitely stand in for it if filming in Damascus itself was...
And even arguably, quite a lot of it could film in Arizona. It'd be quite convenient for you. Could probably manage that.
Good point,
you
know, yeah.
We've got the right set builders.
If you want to combine it with a holiday, come over and we can do the whole thing in Sunderland. There's like, we've got four or five car parks in Sunderland that basically... We can pretty much commandeer. And Paul, don't Google it, Paul. Don't Google it because it'll ruin it, but you will love Sunderland, Paul. Paul Giamatti, trust me on this one.
Very underrated as a tourist destination.
Don't Google it, though. Don't Google it.
Don't ruin
it. It's not mobbed by tourists. You hate it when you go somewhere and it's just mobbed by tourists. It's not that. It's not going to be mobbed. You're not going to be mobbed.
It's not like that. It's actually quite undiscovered. It's a bit of a secret, Paul. I probably shouldn't be saying, writing about it in this novel. But yeah.
Right, but that's why the novel's called The Sunderland All Inclusive. They don't want you.
That's right.
Maybe that was a mistake.
That was probably a mistake. And that's why there's a photo of you, Paul Giamatti, on the front cover, because we thought you'd be more likely to notice it.
Signing a contract.
If you're reading this in your downstairs toilet, Paul, it's because we've successfully managed to break into your downstairs toilet and put it in there.
We've only printed one copy of this book. And it's in your hands.
And if you look up and to your left, that photo of your wedding day that you keep in your downstairs toilet, you press on it, it opens a secret passage all the way to Sunderland. Just get in. We've got a little, we've got a monorail in there we put in.
There's a trail of Skittles as well. You can follow that.
The trail of Skittles, which we think you probably love.
Help yourself.
Those are yours, Paul.
And listen, if you won't do it, what we'll do is we'll drug you. We'll cover you in ping pong balls, and then we'll get Andy Serkis to CGI you in.
Yeah,
we're deep faking it. Paul is what we're saying. It's up to you.
We're going to deep fake it. We're going to deep fake it anyway, mate. Yeah, and in the deep fake version, maybe there'll be some director's cut footage where you say good things about Nazis.
Yeah, with your dick out. That's about that, Paul.
With you, yeah? No, I didn't want this to turn into a threatening, I didn't want it to turn into a threat, Paul. But you're giving us very little choice. Because you still haven't emailed. I can tell you haven't emailed us.
Yeah. So, but it's up to you whether or not you want your left bollock to appear as a Nazi tank commander in this movie. That's up to you. That's your choice. I don't want to do it.
We don't want to.
You could. I want you to choose to make us not do that.
King, it's very hard for us not to.
It's up to you.
Your choice, Paul. Yeah? And we know some very powerful people. Well, Paul Giamatti, for one, hopefully. See if this goes well. He's got a lot of leverage.
I mean, you've got a lot of leverage.
You've got a lot of leverage. But we can flip this script. Basically, we've written a sort of... It's kind of version of a palindromic script. It doesn't read the same the other way around. But if you read it the wrong way around, it's a...
It might make more sense than the right way around.
But then it turns into a film which is basically a documentary about you confessing to a series of unsolved murders.
In 1960s Idaho.
1960s Idaho.
But from before you were born.
Yeah, and you might not think that those murders might tie in with your movement. We might make it a hard case. Well, we actually took the provision of committing those murders ourselves. Yeah, so we can make sure they tally.
If you plot them on a map across Parsifal County, they become something called the Parsifal Mosaic.
And what's in a mosaic of? That's right, Paul, the birthmark on your left buttock. That's right. We've got you.
Gotcha.
Proof. And you may not have noticed that you've got a birthmark on your left buttock before. Well, two answers to that. One is it's on your left buttock, so you can't see it. And two, we've made the provision of putting it there ourselves.
Paul Giamatti. Poor man. I think Teenage Benjamin quite liked James Bond as well. I liked the films. And then since then, you know, in the years since, I've watched every Bond film that's come out, often at the cinema.
Yeah.
Each time thinking, oh, this will be good.
This will be the one that, yeah.
And then they're always just hot horseshit now.
Hot horseshit, aren't they, at the moment?
And have they got worse or have I just grown up or like, do you know what I mean?
That's a good question. I don't know. So I arrived at adulthood around the sort of Pierce Brosnan age. And
Goldeneye.
Those are great though, right? They got worse.
They were, for my view, they were crazy silly. There were sort of weird ice palaces and stuff like that, and it all got a bit bananas. But then you're saying, because you were still a teeny bopper at that time, so maybe you thought that was great. What followed Pierce? Was that Craig?
Straight to Craig. And then Casino Royale is really good, the first one he did.
Obviously, Giamatti just did one, but it doesn't get talked about, does it? It's like, because isn't it?
It was slightly off the books, wasn't it?
It was slightly off the books. Yeah, it's not technically a Bond film. It's more a film about two guys who are middle-aged American friends who do a tour of the wine district in California. They're not technically not a Bond film. But
to rename one of the characters in ADR, right, didn't they, afterwards in post? Because of the legal challenge about one of them being James Bond.
Exactly.
Just going on a winery's holiday.
Yeah.
Very rarely saw James Bond on vacation, did you? Trying to finish his bloody novel.
Exactly. So that was the silly phase. So did you like that, Mike, or not? The kind of, it was over...
No, I didn't like
that. No, because you established you like bureaucratic levels of detail, don't you?
Yeah.
Who signed a chit for that? Who signed a chit for that? There's been no chits in this entire fucking film. Where are the chits?
I want it dense. I want it on dense chits, left, right and centre.
Paper trail, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the biggest lie that the Bond films have told us is that the Daniel Craig ones are good. Because people go, oh, Casino Royale. Because why? They go, oh, it's actually really dark and interesting. What the fuck are you talking about? There's a guy with like a laser penis. They're always just, like, it's not dark and interesting.
It's true. Yeah. They've just convinced us that it's dark and interesting because occasionally he has a little bit of blood on his cheek. Oh, you know what I mean? Oh, he's fallible.
No, but also there'll be a bit where he goes, I actually could have loved you. And then, you know. Gets his laser penis out and kills everyone in the room. But no, there's like moments that's supposedly dark or whatever.
There was one that was particularly bad. I think it might be Quantum of Solace.
Terrible title as well, it's got to be said.
Where that's the Bolivian water shortage thing or something, isn't it?
Where Yes, so it turns out the baddie is a kind of Hugo Banzer-style sort of military leader who wants to have all of South America.
To make the world's biggest ice cube. And then I'm going to freeze Panama.
Panama. Panama.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a scene where Daniel Craig discovers, I think, an underground reservoir.
Yeah, I mean, who cares?
That's supposed to be the moment the scales fall from your eyes. You're like, where's the big space laser? Where's that, please?
It probably it's to do with what age you are when it's right for you. So the ones that were the right age, where I was the right age for it, was the ones where.
But hang on, the right age for it is 55-year-old man.
Well, I think we have two moments in life where we're ready for Bond, which is 15-year-old boy and 55-year-old man, I suppose. Because for me, it was the one with the big... Was it a big spaceship eating spaceships, or was it a big boat eating boats? Have they done both?
It was a big spaceship. It was a spaceship eating spaceships.
The spaceship eating spaceships I liked.
Moonraker?
That phase. I think that's Roger Moore.
Roger Moore was super silly, but quite fun. Quite a fun camp. Didn't take itself too seriously.
Sean Connery, is he any good?
I like him. Good. They're problematic, aren't they?
They are a bit problematic, yeah.
Of course, the next Bond will probably be... Hi. Hello there. Are you a High Court judge? Good. I respect that. Shall we get married and then stay together forever and have a family? The next Bond.
Probably have a bloody electric car, won't he?
Bloody 00 snowflake, won't he? Probably.
Do you do any mocktails? Yeah. I'll have a smoothie and an avocado, thanks. Yeah.
Bond's gone woke.
So, Dr. Sanchez, we finally meet, and now I'm going to tell you what I've been meaning to tell you for a long time, which is I want to apologise for Britain's colonial past. Isn't it?
There we are. The name's 007. License to recycle.
This vicious device is called the spiralizer, and it'll absolutely destroy a courgette and turn it into a sort of substitute for spaghetti, which is a bit watery, but it's just not as good as spaghetti.
But if you are trying to cut down on carbs, cut down too much on carbs, because you do have quite a physical job, actually, Bond. So you do need some carbs on board. Let's not be silly,
Bond. Eh?
My genuine feeling about the Bond films, I think they've gone quite bad. There's a few, like Skyfall's quite good, I think. The most recent one's baffling. Terrible ending.
That's one where he basically, spoiler alert. He dies.
Yeah, he dies. Yeah. He dies at the end.
Big time dies.
Shouldn't really happen.
The thing, I know this is really pedantic of me and probably a bit annoying, but it's not like, because Doctor Who does regenerate, they've built it into the storyline that he starts again as a character.
Yes.
So like in that last Bond film with Daniel Craig dies and he has this very intense relationship with this woman and it's all very emotional. Are we supposed to believe this is the same guy that has had thousands of lovers and, you know, like...
Going back into the early 60s.
Going back to the early 60s. He's had some real look changes. He's aged extremely well. But, like, yeah, I find that a bit weird about it. Like, are you supposed to... At what point do you... Is it like with each new Bond, you're supposed to imagine this is a reboot, essentially?
I think so. My feeling is that in order for it to work as a franchise... It needs to be a period piece. So I think it should always just be the 60s.
Oh, that's quite a good idea.
When the cars are cool and the suit makes sense and like...
You've got to get to a phone box.
Exactly.
And also the values make sense as well, do you think, as well, basically?
Although I guess they are a bit problematic in the modern era. So, yeah. But I just think it all just makes... Everything just makes a bit more sense in the era. And now it's corporate into stools and that he has to do all the stuff that's kind of redolent of the old ones, but then he has to pretend that he's modern and... It's all to do with an app, whatever. Like it's
one's been caught out on bloody TikTok. Right? something to do with an algorithm, probably flash mob. Some other words.
Now I've got to check. I've got my electric pen. I've got my laser trousers. And now I've just got to check my amount of followers on Instagram. Ben, can I say, if I was Barbara Broccoli and I was having a script meeting, get some new ideas in, how do we keep the franchise going? And you said that, I would press the button and your seat would fire you out of the fucking Empire States Building, mate.
Onto a pile of money.
Onto a pile of money, because we're making this happen, mate.
It's a good idea. It's not. It's a good idea.
But we've got some question marks about this thing that all the characters have to be played by Paul Giamatti.
No, that's hard. That's a red line for me. Sorry.
Is it Giamatti or Giamatti? How do you say it, Ben? Because we're going to work with you. We want to know how you say it.
I'm going to say it the way Paul Giamatti says it, which is Giamatti.
Giamatti. So Giamatti's playing all the characters and no makeup. He looks like himself for all the characters.
That's right, yeah.
Including Blofeld's cat. Yeah.
Same voice. Yeah. Same clothes, even, oddly. He will not even shift on costume.
He's not even a shift on costume. He's going to be wearing a Piero Leclone outfit. For everyone, is that right?
That's correct.
Piero Le Sad Clown with a big black tear coming out of his left eye, is that right?
A big white pointy hat. Yes.
Incredibly pointy white big white hat. Is that right? And how many pom poms did he say he's got coming off him?
He's got one at the end of every finger.
One at the end of every finger. And you've written here as many pom poms as we can afford. Coming out of his torso. Oh man.
I think that's a Bond reboot a lot of people could get behind.
I could get behind.
I'm now drinking an African farmhouse ale.
Nice.
It's quite nice. Tolokazi is a multiple award-winning brand that pays homage to the female brewers of the African soil.
So these cheese biscuits that I've been eating, check out how pretentious they are, right? That's what it says in the box. Drink pairings.
Come off it. Wind your neck in, man. Come on. You're a crunchy, cheesy snack. You're basically a pricey Watsit.
You're a flat Watsit. Drink pairings: blonde beer, lager, champagne, prosecco, fruity white wines, lighter style whiskey highball. How do you feel about that, Ben? Bearing in mind earlier on you're eating a Caramac.
Was it eating a Caramac?
Ben was genuinely eating a Caramac, even though they've been discontinued. Ben was eating a Caramac.
There's no drinks pairings on the back of this Caramac.
There's no. I think it's assumed that it's a Pinot. It's any low tannin wine.
It's one of the darker Pinots. Yeah. Or just some molten palm oil in a cup. It does say on the back, it's got the Nestle logo, which is some birds in a nest. And underneath it says, good food, good life.
But it doesn't say that they're providing either of those things, does it? It's just saying those things.
It's not even saying whether it's pro those things.
Exactly. It's just leaving them there. Just putting them there and placing them there. Do you want some more stuff from my box?
Yes, please.
Flavour profile.
Cheesy biscuit.
It should just say cheesy biscuit here, but it doesn't. It's got a paragraph. We use the best Parmesan cheese.
Who's writing this?
The poet laureate, Simon Armitage. It's very hard to make coin out of writing poetry.
You got to take a couple of corporates here and there.
He writes the copy on all boxes in this nation, pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, Jeanette Winterson does Pringles, doesn't she?
Winterson does Pringles. Yeah. She's got the Pringles gig sewn up.
But Armitage is sewn up any cheesy goods for decades.
Anything cheesy is Armitage every time. And he improvises the E numbers. often whilst, standing in a glen. He'll knock out some stuff about the woods and how they remind him of time. And then he'll improvise some E numbers into his dictaphone. Flavour profile. We use the best Parmesan cheese.
That's not true, is it?
No, it's not true, is it?
No one's letting them near the best Parmesan. They've hidden the best Parmesan cheese.
The best.
That's in a secret location. That's in the Holy See.
It's the Pope. The Pope eats the best Parmesan cheese. Yeah. Fact. And occasionally one of the Swiss guards will get some.
Yeah, and then but then that Swiss Guard is immediately Swiss cheesed, ironically,
Swiss cheesed
to death
through. We use the best Parmesan cheese with long-lasting, tangy, nutty, and caramel notes. That's for like the Caramac. So we have, in a way, we have been connecting, Ben.
Because it's the same one. It's the same one as Caramac.
It's the same one as Caramac, probably.
So this is the same thing.
Basil and toasted pine nuts give a herbal sweetness and honey profile. This is, I can't, but this is a bit much, isn't it?
They've got brass bollocks to be writing all this kind of stuff.
Brass bollocks.
Absolute nonsense.
Also, I'm expecting now a bit about our brand story. And it's almost always, we're two posh knobs. We met while travelling.
We're a couple of twats with a huge amount of disposable income.
Huge amount of investment capacity. Basil and toasted pine nuts give herbal sweetness and honey profile.
Is that what they're called? Basil and toasted pine nuts?
That's the two of them. Well, I'm Basil and toasted pine nuts. We should get together.
Toasted pine nuts has definitely got a top knot, hasn't he? Do that for free.
My dad makes loads and loads of money from BAE systems. So does my dad. That's amazing.
I technically own Northumbria.
But now we're delivering a flavour bomb.
My dad makes shells. You know what else has shells? Pistachio nuts. So you know what else has a nut? Pine nuts. Let's put them in our cheese crackers and it'll be part of our narrative story. Something that people can really get behind and believe in. A classic Italian flavour combination. What a load of shit. The Drinks Bakery creates unique savoury snacks that are expertly flavour profiled to match great drinks from around the world. Our delicious, rich, crumbly drinks biscuits are thoughtfully crafted to balance with and enhance the character of your favourite drinks. So whether you're a G&T lover or a craft beer buff, ditch the run-of-the-mill bar snacks and raise your glass to proper flavour. It'll also help if you're a cunt. Everyone involved in making this product was a cunt. We're all cunts. Anyway, this is the kind of company which will sometimes get the gig of providing snacks on an aeroplane, because you know sometimes you get a little box of like, yes, a weird crack you've never heard of.
Yeah. Mike, this Caramac was provided to me by your sister.
Yeah.
Please pass on my thanks, and also I thought it was vile.
Yeah. I think that's a very happy ending to that story, because it would have been, she'd have been deeply saddened if you had found your what to you was the ultimate flavour of all time, only to then have it ripped away from you.
Yes, forever.
Have it discontinued, yeah. Spend the rest of my life wandering the world looking for a Caramac. Right, let's read your emails.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
Good emails this week. This is from Samantha.
Hello, Samantha.
Over the past couple of weeks, I've been suffering a terrible case of earworm. Whenever the dictator Hugo Banza is mentioned on the pod, I sing a reworked version of Tiny Dancer in my head, inserting the despot's name into the obvious spot. Hold me closer, Hugo Banza.
Oh, Samantha.
And I have this Banza version of the ditty circling my brain for anywhere between 24 and 72 hours.
Seamstress for the military band. Samantha has now subjected that. I mean, there's going to be scores of listeners are going to be infected by that. Well, she won't be alone now, will she? I mean, it's already got Henry.
It works really well, doesn't it? To be honest, it doesn't. I'm sure the lyrics make about as much sense as they did before, frankly.
Yeah. In more Banza news, I like the way the Banza is really running and running in this series.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll all come to an end when we get the cold water of someone emailing their experiences with the regime. But until that time...
until we actually study it properly.
So before, it was Mikey emailed in saying that he was in a sauna with Hugo Banza.
Multi-anecdote Mikey.
Oh, that's right. We had to choose an anecdote. Are we going to choose another one?
We haven't had the sauna one yet, have we?
No, he just teed up the sauna one.
Yeah.
And I think that was being in a sauna with six former presidents of Chile. Anyway, Emily emails... I wanted to share my sauna encounter with an active and revered politician. Mm. My friend and I visited Harrogate Turkish Baths in April 2023.
I've been there.
Mm-hmm. Have you?
Great baths. I've been to those baths, yeah.
Were you dressed as Boris Johnson? Is that what happened here?
No, why?
We ventured into the hot room in the sauna and chose our spot on the hot marble bench. I was chatting away to my friend with my back to someone. Once we'd had our fill and suitably heated up, we trotted to the next medium heat section. It was rammed. So in our ignorance and our overconfidence, we hot-footed it into the top heat section.
Literally hot-footed it.
We placed our towels down so we didn't crisp up on the marble like a prawn on a griddle. Once sat down, we could see everyone in the room, including all the previous heat sections. Quickly realising that the top heat section is indeed top heat, I got worried that my glasses might melt off my face. So I took them off, blurring my vision. My friend had been staring through the steam at a man that had been sat next to me in the first heat section. There's the sort of mental geography of this is quite hard, isn't it?
We're getting bogged down in the heat. I think temperature...
I've built a picture, but I can't guarantee it's accurate.
Also, I think temperature is one of the hardest things to convey in an anecdote, temperature. I think we can just... I think if we all just assume it's quite hot throughout... and then not focus so much on that.
Anyway, her friend says, I've been staring at that man for ages as I couldn't place him, but I know him, that guy there. He must be one of my dad's friends. 2 minutes later, my friend says, no, definitely not my dad's friend. Hang on, it's Andy Burnham.
Well, well. The mayor of Manchester.
And that's how he got his nickname, isn't it? Because he had a heat-related testicle injury, didn't he, that day? And that's how he got his surname. Yeah. Why not?
His big hammy testicle.
Yeah, I was thinking Burnham, you know, Burnham.
Oh, he's burned him.
He's burned him. Not
She was in a mixture of embarrassment and elation. Being from Manchester, Andy is the one politician we were very happy to have shared a hot marble bench with. He looked like he was having a lovely time with his family, and he has a very hairy chest.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, nice story.
And that's from Emily.
Nice. Thanks, Emily. Yeah.
Nice story. It's a nice story. I'm going to add, in a way. actually, you know what? I'm going to do like they did on that box of product. I'm going to say, nice stories are always good to hear. Do you know what I mean? Like the way that box said something. Do you remember?
Oh, like the way my Caramac said, good food, good life.
Exactly. Like the way your Caramac box said, good food, good life. Good story, good times.
I think to be fair to Emily, I think we may, or certainly I may, have sort of asked people to send in times they have spent time in a sauna with a serving politician.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's come from nowhere.
I was thinking this is a bit apropos of nothing.
Well, it was apropos of me.
It's apropos of you. So... Yeah. By the way, Andy Burnham, right? Has he always been a politician? Has he ever been like...
No, he wasn't born one.
He's been in the game a long time.
Was he once in a band or something?
No.
Are you sure? He feels like he was in a band and then he's now Andy Burnham. Now I'm going to become like the mayor of and I'm going to become like a politician. But...
Like I was in the charlatans, exactly. But now I'm a real charlatan. Hey, who's the charlatan now? Yeah. I don't think so, but I think people think of him as being a slightly cooler brand of politician because he'll like...
Yeah, because he's a bit... Yeah.
He'll like wear a nice jacket occasionally.
It's because he's a bit cool. That's why I'm thinking that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think currently Emily's winning in terms of like most senior politician to share a sauna with. That's Mayor of Manchester. Can we go higher? Wow.
President of Manchester.
So do, if you have a more impressive politician than Burnham.
It's a good one. Could be PM one day. Who knows? It's on the card, isn't it? You never know.
Hello, this is just a little message to say that despite Andy Burnham's protestations, we will be doing a live show in Manchester on April the 24th, which is a Wednesday at 7 p.m. Tickets will go on general sale next week on Wednesday, so that's Wednesday the 24th of January, and we'll share a link and details of where to get tickets on next week's show. But there'll be a Patreon pre-sale, so all Patreon subscribers will get a link on the 22nd of January, which is a Monday, so 2 days early. So they'll have first bite of the cherry when it comes to getting tickets. We can't wait to do it. And Andy Burnham can't stop us. Okay, let's move on to our next topic. A few people have emailed about this. And this is about the Three Bean Salad shop and the jigsaw that is on sale.
Okay, can I say, I deny everything in relation to that jigsaw.
So
I did not create the jigsaw.
You did create the jigsaw.
Did create the jigsaw. But I'm denying, you know, I was part of a chain of command in terms of that jigsaw. I'm not the person you're looking for, is what I'm going to say.
Okay, well, let's see what their problem is first. Or maybe they're just congratulating you on the jigsaw.
In which case, it was my brainchild, yeah.
This is from Barry in Iowa. Dear Beans, the jigsaw is moving along, but it's not easy. Don't get me wrong, I love a jigsaw, and even built my own jigsawing table. But the bean jigsaw is tough. Last night at about 1 a.m, my wife, seeing me struggle with the jigsaw, said, "Hey, love, are you sure you're still enjoying that?"
Ooh.
Oh, no.
Ouch.
I said, "Oh, yeah, I mean, it's really difficult. But it's a strange kind of joy. A bit like passing a very firm stool, simultaneously enjoyable and difficult. And also, what really is joy, anyway?"
Well, you know what I always say, Ben, is great jigsaw, good experience. So, basically, for people that don't know, on the Three Bean Salad shop online, there's a jigsaw which is based on the art for one of the episodes, the episode about maps. I adapted it slightly to make it the right shape for the proportions for the jigsaw.
Fern emails. As firm bean fans, my husband and I gifted each other bean-related presents this Christmas.
Ooh, nice.
Very good. I received Henry's illustrated biography of Joe Wilkinson, and I gave my fella the Three Bean Jigsaw.
Nice.
The book was excellent, and Henry's drawings were even better than I had thought they would be. I loved it. So, low expectations to begin with,
yeah,
maybe?
Backhanded compliment, whatever, negging. I it's fine.
The jigsaw, also drawn by Henry, is a great drawing, but after having made a start on it, I have one question. Have any of you actually tried doing this fucking jigsaw? Not to blow my own trumpet, but I consider myself quite an accomplished jigsaw completer. After my husband gave up within the first day, I had a good go at it. It really is quite an impossible challenge.
Oh, no.
Owing to Henry having used all of the same colours for everything.
Oh, no, I didn't know. I didn't know how it worked.
The many, many scrawls in indecipherable handwriting and what can only be described as swathes of plain blue.
There's a lot of blue. <That's a lot. laughs> There's a lot of plain blue because it's the ocean. I couldn't help it because it's a map. There's a sea. A lot of it is the sea because it's a map of an island. Yeah. Because basically, it's a jigsaw where almost all of the pieces look very, very similar. So there isn't the traditional pleasure of trying to match up bits of an image which are separated into different shaped pieces. It's more, I guess, you'd have to get one piece and cycle through every other piece. It's more of a bit like guessing a pin number or something. You'd have to just go. So you take one piece, you go through all the other 999 pieces. One, check it off. Check it. I mean, you'd have to probably use a spreadsheet, check them off, maybe mark them. If they are the relevant ones, you stick it, and then you go through the cycle again. But obviously, that exponentially, that takes longer and longer. So it's probably
many lifetimes.
It's many, many lifetimes. It's a generational piece.
That said, though, Henry, and I don't want to completely put people off ever buying the jigsaw because we've had a number of people send us photographs of the completed jigsaw.
Oh, very
really?
Good. There you go.
So it is possible.
It is doable.
So it's absolutely doable. For example, Alex emails. Attached is a photo of the completed jigsaw. If no one has yet claimed the title as first to complete the masterpiece, I will humbly take the honour and dedicate it to my newborn. Congratulations on your newborn.
Wow. Yeah.
Completing it cemented in me that I am indeed now fully a provincial dad. Completing a jigsaw over Christmas with an onion child tucked under one arm.
Congrats.
Oh, that's lovely, Alex.
It really is. Yeah, well done. Lovely. Great stuff.
So it can be done. It's sort of like the new finishing Tetris, maybe, isn't it? Finishing the three bean salad jigsaw. I think this could make it become more popular, actually. It's like a kind of
who will rise to the challenge.
Anyway, if you've completed it, do let us know, and just give us a general sense of your general well-being afterwards. And finally, we had someone email in a while ago talking about how they felt they were probably the most radioactive listener.
Yes.
We've had a couple of challenges to that. So the original guy, I think, was doing a medical
test. Correct.
Yeah.
And had to swallow some kind of radioactive tincture or something.
Yeah.
Hello, Beans. This is from Tim from Colorado. A couple of episodes ago, a listener named Rob claimed the title of the most radioactive listener is he had ingested a radioactive dye. I, too, have ingested radioactive dye for a medical study in the past. But that's not all. My childhood home was part of the affected area of the Rocky Flats plutonium plant's nuclear waste dumping scandal.
Oh, my God.
That sounds bad.
I believe it would be difficult for another listener to be more radioactive than myself and still be alive.
Wow.
So there we go. So Tim from Colorado makes...
Best of luck, Tim.
Yeah, best of luck.
A fairly good case for being the most radioactive listener. But then we got an email from someone else. Mm-hmm. Hello, Beans. I work at the nuclear decommissioning site of Sellafield.
Good Lord.
I cannot stand by and listen to Radioactive Rob claiming to be the most radioactive listener. Due to the nature of my job, I spend a lot of time in controlled radioactive areas where I uptake a fairly consistent amount of gamma radiation. I legally can't go into too much detail, but there was also a very minor incident where I received an internal dose of beta radiation. I then had to sit inside a special contraption to work out just how much was inside me, and finally I had to provide pee and poo samples in bottles for a few months. As a result, they calculated how much radiation I would receive throughout my life from the dose received on that fateful day. The prognosis was fine, but something to consider when getting x-rays. Although Rob's claim was strong, I ask you to consider me as the most radioactive listener. Yours eternally, Sellafield employee number 77369.
Congratulations.
Thank you, 77369.
P.S. If you ever feel like visiting Sellafield, just run up to the armed guards on the gates screaming Pompidou and they might let you in.
It's time to pay the ferryman. Patreon.com/freebeansalad.
Thanks to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you.
Patreon.com/freebeansalad.
Thank you very much.
You can get access to bonus episode every month, ad-free episodes, or if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was last night.
Sure was.
He was, wasn't he?
Good event.
Oh, yeah.
Was it Name That Cactus?
It was Name That Cactus. Thank you, Henry. And here's my report.
It was Name That Cactus last night at the Sean Bean Lounge, in which Sean Bean loungers were invited to impress Sean Bean himself and win the honour of choosing the name for Sean Bean's latest St. Hilary's Day cactus. Alex Bailey-Smith performed a salacious ode that had to be cut short when it made Finley Tregidgo physically ill. Nick Chambers juggled swine. Johnny Martins made a Long Island iced tea with his feet and served it in the nose of Ben. Anthony Niblett danced the forbidden dance of Derby. Andrew Robert Turner expressed the anal glands of Bertie Hemmings blindfolded. Chris Parr ate a Hyundai i10 without any condiments. James Thomas threw Will Morgan through a ring of fire and into the flaming arms of Jules Berner. Elliot Walker made an ill-judged attempt at a moonwalk, while Hazel Robinson tossed a welly over a house. Charlotte Woodhouse folded a prawn cocktail crisp 5 times without breaking it, while Andy folded a giraffe into the shape of a balloon. Carly Leonard tried to carve a statue of Sean Bean into a tree stump, but got the nose, eyes, chin, cheeks, ears and forehead wrong, and accidentally made an oaken Lindsay Cummins doppelganger, which meant Lindsay had to eschew all material possessions and take up hermitage in the caves of Urwithfa, for so it is written. Jeff Langford rode a bucking unicycle side saddle while rotating his nipple tassels in opposite directions, as Luna M. Cooks cracked a whip about his head, face and buttocks for motivational purposes. Dave Strivens did a show and tell with his iron filings collection and was sent away with a thick ear. Beth Ursel played Born to be Wild on the violin and was banned from the lounge for 24 hours and from violins for life. Richard Jude Thompson did some armpit farts and remarkably almost won. But Barb Connolly pipped him to the post with a sensational performance of Jersey Barb, an ambitious one Barb spectacular in which the musical Jersey Boys is performed in its entirety by a single Barb. Barb was awarded the task of naming Sean Bean's cactus and achieved a standing ovation when declaring the cactus be simply named Bastard. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the end of the episode. We'll finish with a version of our theme tune made by one of you.
Yes, please.
And this week, it's Ian.
Hello, Ian.
Ian writes, please find attached a theme tune version using the musical instruments, which are the Elbro Raspberry, a kazoo, and a Bhutanese prayer wheel.
Mm. What's the question?
Ha ha ha.
Okay. Until next time, goodbye.
Thanks, bye.
Goodbye. Oh, God. Was it that there wasn't a question?
There was no question.
There was no question. Yeah, I thought it might have been that.
Yeah, not even close, mate.